Headlines.
Live from Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And in the right corner, I am frazzled Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
Welcome to the most disruptive show in America, Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one, municipal cities around the country are speeding up plans to remove Confederate statues, and the ACLU's stand on the permit for the Charlottesville protests. Charlottesville protest sparks a major discussion over First Amendment rights related to hate speech. Surprisingly, Frazzled Lee is one of the first casualties of the constitutional battle.
I am?
Wait. In round two.
Okay.
In round two, Trump advisor Steve Bannon appears to be on the hot seat once again as calls for his dismissal come from all angles. Will Steve Bannon be the next casualty of the Kelly takeover of the White House administrative duties? Then, in round three, the Taliban has penned a letter recommending that the president withdraw forces from Afghanistan after 16 years of war. Will that affect his decision to go or stay? That and more coming up on today's episode of the most disruptive show in America, Fault Lines, with Nixon and Stranahan. And don't forget, if you want to listen to Nixon and Stranahan online, you can do it any number of ways. We got the Spreaker app. You can download the Sputnik app. You can also go to the Sputnik News Agency Facebook page, and you can watch us on Facebook Live. You can share the Facebook Live feed, and of course, you can watch it later for yourself. You can go to iTunes. You want to podcast it? Go to iTunes. Go to iTunes and subscribe. And when you subscribe, you will be notified as soon as the show is up afterwards. You can download it. You can listen to it later. You can email it to your friends. You can put it up on your page, whatever. But don't forget to leave a review and a 5-star rating when you subscribe on iTunes. And most importantly, if you're listening on 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C., you're inside or maybe a little bit outside of the Beltway, out in Silver Spring or wherever, you can certainly enjoy it. You can listen to it in your car driving around. And we're also on Periscope at Stranahan. That's Lee Stranahan's Periscope page, Periscope handle, Twitter handle.
It's both, actually.
Yeah, there we go. That's all one. So you can go to at Stranahan and you can watch the Periscope. And it's actually divided into three separate issues. So there's any number of ways
and
you can watch it.
And while you're on Twitter, make sure to follow at Garland Nixon.
There we go.
That young man is coming up in the broadcasting world. I predict big things for him. So make sure you follow Garland. How are you doing today, Garland?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. So let's start with Confederate monuments, which we'll do touch a little bit on that. That's really, we'll discuss it because a few things are happening. But then we're going to go to first. And that's the main thing it's about. So here's what's happened. You know, some things are predictable. And one of the things that was pretty predictable, you know, the irony of the world, the kind of Zen thing, the opposite happens of what you want. So these guys go and they have a big fracas and a big, make a big to-do over Confederate monuments. And as a result, the mayors of Baltimore, Lexington, Kentucky, officials in Memphis, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Florida, announced new initiatives on Monday aimed at taking down Confederate monuments. Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam, a Republican, urged lawmakers to rid the state capitol of a bust of Nathan Bedford Forrest, a Confederate general, early member of the KKK. Also in Maryland, you've got Mike Bush, I believe, who is the head of the House of Representatives in Maryland, who's, you know, there's some statutes they want to take down. So the bottom line is what they did was they raised the issue up so people got freaked out and people who had forgot about it suddenly, you know, they got the opposite of what they wanted.
Let me ask you this. What would your guess be? Who do you think knew more about this event before it happened? People on the left or people on the right? Where do you think it was more publicized, on the left or on the right?
I really don't know because I didn't pay a lot of attention to it
happened. Just think about it. So there's going to be a white supremacist rally right? There was no pre-press on sites like Breitbart. Nobody on the right was saying, hey, everybody, this Unite the Right rally is coming up and it's going to be awesome. It's going to have Richard Spencer and Matthew Heimbach, and nobody on the right was talking about it. Now, on the left, on the other hand, you knew about this before it happened, right?
The only reason I knew about it, actually, and here's what surprised me.
They were organizing against it, right?
The only reason I really knew about it was because there was an ACLU issue going on. The ACLU,
right.
Which transitions us into it. The ACLU, basically the organizers of the march on the alt-right organizers, were initially wanted to do a wanted to do it in the center of town.
Well,
Charlottesville didn't want him to do it.
Let me correct some of the record on that. So what happened was the guy who organized this event got a permit to do it at what used to be Lee Park, but now is Emancipation Park. Okay. And this guy has started trouble before down there. But by the way, this is a guy, we talked about this before, the guy who organized this event, Jason Kessler, he was not on the right. He was a Obama supporter. He was an Occupy Wall Street supporter right up until Trump got elected. So let's leave that aside. It's a bit suspicious, but okay. So he got a permit to do the event in Lee Park. Then what happened was there was a counter protest that got a permit a few weeks later to do it at a different park a ways away. Then the reason the ACLU got involved was because then the city suddenly was like, well, we're going to take away the first permit.
Right.
But they weren't going to take away the counter protesters' permit.
Right.
So the ACLU got involved, and then a federal judge ruled that they had to let the white supremacists, white nationalists, whatever you want to call them, do their event. A federal judge ruled that.
Right.
Then the day of the event and right before, the county overruled the federal judge, which, by the way, county, you can't do, right? And they did. And by the way, the reason the judge ruled in their favor is because he said, you canceled one permit, but you didn't cancel the other.
Well, and see, keep in mind that
I think
city,
that's why the ACLU got involved.
Keep in mind, one of the issues there was that the city's argument was that there was too many people and we can't handle it. But the permit that they didn't cancel had actually more people.
That's so exactly argument, right.
And let me add this. For those of who are angry at the ACLU, and like Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe was angry at the ACLU. You know, he blamed the ACLU. It's all your fault, et cetera, right? And the ACLU's position was, wait a minute. And this has always been my, and I don't understand, people get mad at the ACLU when a judge rules. Lee, the ACLU, Garland Nixon, Lee Stranahan, Joe Smithers, whoever, you can go before a judge and make an argument that the city should do X, Y, or Z. The city can then go before that judge and argue, we don't have to do it. The judge makes the decision. Why get mad at the person who goes before the judge? The ACLU doesn't win every case. They lose some. So why is Terry McAuliffe and other people getting mad at the ACLU? The ACLU had a right to bring the case to court, and the judge made a decision. So it's not the ACLU that
did it. But can I tell you why I think he's against it? I'll tell you what. I think that this is being used to shut down free speech, period. There was already a very bad trend in this country towards shutting down people's freedom of speech. And I got to tell you, the people trying to do it, you're making a huge mistake. Because if you think your free speech is safe, if you think you can shut down people with ideas you don't like, be careful. Because somebody's going to come along and shut down the ideas that you like. And that's the thing that they need to watch out for. This is always the argument. You know, the solution for bad speech is more speech, right? That's the answer.
Isn't that something you and I always talk about? We always talk about this. Look, people should be able to go online or go wherever and read what they want and see what they want. You know, well, I'm not saying child porn, but you know what I mean? I mean, you know, not something that's blatantly illegal, but I'm saying as far as ideas.
Yes.
And people should be able to make decisions for themselves. And don't blame the ACLU or any other organization, right wing, left wing, whatever, that goes to court and petitions a judge for something. The judge makes the decision, and people have a right to do it, and the judge makes a constitutional decision.
And I've talked about, I'm such a free speech advocate that I've talked about the New Black Panther Party, James Muhammad, was handing out wanted dead or alive posters about George Zimmerman. And by the way, the government said nothing and nobody said anything about that. But by the way, you know who did is the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, did note that on their page that happened. But even that issue to me is arguable. I'd like to see it in front of a judge.
Right.
So if it's one thing, you know, again, if somebody is handing out wanted Garland Nixon, wanted dead or alive, they did that to my friend Brandon Darby. They didn't like him in Austin, and they put up wanted dead or alive posters. Now, that to me is questionable, but it's not clear, right? It's clear if you point at Brandon or you point at George Zimmerman, you say, kill him.
Does that make sense? Right.
That's illegal. And it's another thing if you say, this guy's a bad guy. I don't like his ideas. He killed Trayvon Martin, whatever. that's fine. That's safe. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But that's how big a free speech advocate I am. The point is, though, when you actually look at the permitting process, I talked to my friend Michael Leahy. Michael Leahy is a reporter at Breitbart, does great work. He's gone through the boring work of he tracked down this permit was gotten, then this permit was gotten, then this permit was gotten. He's got a piece. It's either up or it's coming up on Breitbart. People should look for it. You know what? From a free speech standpoint, so far, the white supremacists haven't done anything wrong. Does that make sense? In other words, I don't agree with their ideas, blah, 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 blah. That's not the point. Whether they're communist, whether they're black nationalist, white nationalist, if you get a permit and a federal judge says you can be at the park, it's not up to the local officials to overrule the federal judge.
Keep in mind,
that
even
morning.
With the violence, the ACLU did, one of the things that the ACLU did besides, and they talked about this in their response. So they went to court and they said, this is free speech. You have to give the permit. The permit was given up.
Right.
They sent people to the event as observers, and these people tweeted what they saw.
Yes.
One of the things they tweeted was they said there were some skirmishes going on. There was people fighting, and you know, there was small stuff starting to happen.
Yes.
And they said to the police, look, what are you guys going to do here? And the police said, we are not going to, I actually wrote it down. The police said, we'll not intervene until given the command to do so.
That's exactly
number one.
Right.
Number two,
yes.
You know,
that's
I was
exactly
a law enforcement.
Right.
I was in law enforcement, and I have been involved in protests. I have been in charge of law enforcement at protests.
Yes.
One particular incident that I had, it was out in Montgomery County. But here's the bottom line: it was like anti-hunters at this place called McKee Bashir's, you know, open hunting spot. But here's the bottom line: here's what we did. One group had to be on one side of the road.
That's right.
The other group had to be on one the other side of the road. And we had officers lined in between, and you couldn't cross over each other. Because there was, you know, when you get a protest, there's people, there was abortion and anti-abortion. There were everything that you could think of, people that people,
right.
Okay. But we made sure that the people couldn't get to each other. So in my opinion, a big part of the blame lies when it comes to the fighting and the skirmishes that started. Of certainly the guy who ran this car into people, that's a terrorist act. I'm talking
right.
about all the fighting and the skirmishes.
Well,
ACLU made the argument. Number one, the police waited too long to intervene. Whoever's fault that was, it didn't give the command. But number two, they didn't divide. They didn't create some barricade or line where the two sides couldn't cross.
It's actually worse than that, Garland. Let me explain why. And it's not the cops' fault. Let me explain why.
I'm saying if they're told they can't do it until the command is given.
Well, but here's what happened. So the white supremacist went to the park where they had a permit and where the federal judge had ruled they could do their event. Does that make sense? So now they go there on Saturday. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Then they're told, illegally, by the way, because the judge had already ruled on this, you have to leave. Guess what happened to them when they left? When they left, so again, they're ordered out of the park. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no lawful reason for them to leave the park. The federal judge has already ruled, but whatever. Now the order comes down to the cops, clear them. So as they're getting cleared, they get attacked. They get attacked by the counter protesters. You see what I'm saying?
Right. So what we're looking at again is where Terry McAuliffe is blaming the ACLU.
Right.
It's your fault for having him here. Clearly, it was whatever happened had to happen here. You know, being in Washington, D.C. and having gone to a lot of protests, one thing I will credit the police department here. They're very good at this stuff.
Well, I told you.
And they keep people separate and they march people in area and they will close a street in a second and say, everybody go down there. The local officials did not handle this at all well, and they blamed
exactly
the ACLU,
Garland,
people.
When I was arrested last year in Baton Rouge, I was covering the Alton Sterling shooting, and there's a big group of you know, 99% black protesters on one side and cops on the other side. And this was the day after the police had been shot in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cops all came out with long guns. And the black protesters are yelling at them. So why you have those guns? Why are you trying to kill us? You're going to kill us? And I'm standing right in the middle of this. And at one point, I'm hearing this one guy yell at the cops. And I'm like, everyone, hold up for a second. I'm like, these cops can't talk to you. They're not allowed to. Do you think it's their idea to come out? And I said, you guys are upset about Alton. I understand that. And the guy who was yelling at the cop said, well, you're right. He said, actually, my dad's a sergeant. Young black protest. He said, my dad's a sergeant. I said, here's the issue. Why do you think these cops are out here like this? Do you think it's their idea? This is what they want to do on a Saturday night? I said, no, they were ordered to. I said, where's Kip? Kip's the mayor. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Democrat, black mayor of Baton Rouge. I said, where's Kip? By the way, no one up in the hood who liked Kip. They did not. And you know how this goes. He was the sellout establishment Democrat, got elected. He's black. He's doing nothing for the community. That's the way the community felt. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right or wrong? That's the way they felt. And they were like, exactly right. It's exactly what happened in Baton Rouge. And that turned ugly. And not just because I was arrested. It turned ugly. And I'm going to say something about the white supremacists, too. They were fighting the cops. As soon as you fight the cops, you're fighting the wrong enemy, in my opinion. Because they were doing these tactics where the cops, you've been in this.
Yep.
They have the shields, right?
Yep.
So what do the protesters do? They lean against the shields.
Right.
And what they're doing is, I talked to another black cop who was at the Chicago 68 protest. The Chicago, you remember the Democratic yep. National Committee. He said, and I've seen this tactic too, right? They'll call black cops the N-word. This is what they want to do. They want to instigate something. They
right.
want to do it. He said they would throw bottles of urine at us. We saw that in Charlottesville.
Right.
They were throwing bottles of urine.
So here's the thing about it. And here's where it comes about. People, my point is this, you know, and that's why that you've got these people, a lot of people on the left who are mad at the ACLU. You got Terry McAuliffe blaming the ACLU. The bottom line is this. Be wary about how you restrict speech that you're not happy with. The right thing happened in that the ACLU went to a judge and the judge made a decision. The ACLU didn't make that decision. But at that point, and the ACLU made this point, it is the responsibility of the local jurisdiction to look at what they're going to do. Whatever they got to bring in the National Guard, whoever, it is their responsibility to do that. And when you don't keep protesters and counter protesters separate. As I said, when I did, these were anti hunters and deer hunters. And you know what? If it hadn't have been for us blocking that line, they would have got the fighting
but
over deer.
See,
hunting.
Here's what I'm going to argue. I'm going to argue that because I've seen it over and over and over again that these politicians and these are Democrats, they want a fight.
I think the Republican. I think the mayor of Charlottesville is a Republican, wasn't he?
I'm not sure about that.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm not sure about that. I'd have to check. Mark Singer, I think his name is. I'm not sure.
When
I know
you
the
look
vice
who
mayor
blaming,
was a Democrat.
Be wary of blaming people on the side of less free speech.
Yeah.
Because you're going to end up on the business end of that. So at any rate, we'll be back. We got plenty to talk about on our second round. We're going to talk about the president's advisors and who may stay and who may go. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.
We are back with round two of Fault Lines, the most disruptive radio show in America. It's Fault Lines with me, Lee Stranahan, and him, Garland Nixon. I'm just trying to break it up. I'm trying to say it in a different way.
That was good. Me and him. I like that.
See, because here's the thing
he
that happens.
I don't know.
People don't realize this, but when you do a radio show every day, sometimes I roll out of bed going, I'm Republican investigative reporter. You know what I mean, right?
Like somebody calls you on the phone. Hey, Lee, what's happening? I'm Republican.
There's a Pavlovian response where when I hear that music, right, I know what I'm supposed to say when I'm supposed to say it. And so the whole trick on doing something like this is there's certain stuff we do every day, but you need to keep it fresh. That's all. That's all. The only point that I'm making. Speaking of keeping it fresh. So my friend and mentor, Steve Bannon, is under attack. When I say my friend, by the way, Steve hasn't talked to me since June 27th. Because, you know, Russia. But I like and admire Steve. He hired me over at Breitbart News. And if I remember correctly, they've been trying to get rid of Steve Bannon since Trump was elected.
Yeah.
There's been a major push to get rid of Steve Bannon. And we talked about this back when we started the show back in, I want to say, May?
I thought he was toast then.
Right, you
yeah,
did.
I thought he was toast. I thought he was a dunner.
So there's been a lot of stories. Bannon's gone. Bannon, you know, they're going to move Bannon. They're going to move Bannon. Let me tell you something. This is my prediction at this point, and I could be wrong. I'm always right when I report the news, but on conjecture, like who's going to win an election, I'm 50-50, you know. So I could be wrong on this. I don't have any inside knowledge, but let me tell you what I know. Donald Trump doesn't like to be pushed. I'll tell you what I would do if I were running Breitbart News right now, because Breitbart's got a big platform. It's one of the top 100 websites. This is the headline I would run. Is McMaster running the White House? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with this, right? I would start pushing the narrative, which the media is pushing because it's true. What's happening is the McMaster camp is planting stories that Bannon's on his way out. Well, there's one thing I know about Donald Trump. He doesn't like for anyone to be in charge but Donald Trump. So as soon as somebody starts acting like they're in charge, does that make sense?
This is,
I've seen it over and over again. It's very predictable. And I think that that's actually happening. I don't think it's a bogus storyline. I'm not suggesting it because I'm trying to plant fake news. Who's going to make the decision about Bannon? Is it going to be McMaster? Is it going to be Kelly? Or is it going to be Donald Trump? I'm seeing so much, they're trying so hard to get rid of him, that I predict, and I could be wrong, that it's going to backfire and Steve Bannon is still safe. I will tell you, I've spoken to some people who've talked to Bannon, because again, I haven't talked to him, and I know at this point he wants to stay. And I know friends of his who have suggested to him, basically, Bannon shrugged. It would be the way I would put it, which is, but no, because just think about it for a second. Pretend you're Steve. I know it's hard, Garland, but pretend you're Steve Bannon for a second. He's got a lot of money. He's a millionaire or something like that. Okay. He's getting attacked every day. He doesn't have any forum that he can speak out. Right. And if he leaves, think about this. Do you think if Steve Bannon left the White House today and said, I might be interested in doing a 3-hour national radio show, everybody would jump on it.
Right.
He could have a show. He'd be doing better than Limbaugh right now. And I'm not knocking Rush, but Rush is getting older and he's been around for a while. Now, again, you know, Rush Hannity's doing well. Beck really hurt himself in the election. If Steve Bannon wanted to leave the White House today, he would have less hassles. He would have less problems. He would have a huge audience. And he might be able to affect more policy. Now, all of that being said, what I've been told by people is he would like to stay there. So that's my immediate take on the Bannon.
Well, a couple of things. Okay, so being a guy who I'm kind of opposed to the whole Trumpian thing going on, right? And I see it as mainly in the White House. I guess you could really cut it into three elements, and that would be the cone Wall Street element, the cones and the Mnuchins, et cetera, what I would call the Sebastian Gorka, Stephen Miller, Steve Bannon wing.
Yep, that's
which
right.
I refer to as unaffectionately as the culture warriors, and then the neocons. None of the groups am I really thrilled with. So I would
argue that the first group you mentioned, I'll call them the Goldman Soros group.
Yeah, so there's
because they've got connections to either Sachs or Soros. Does that make sense?
So they're the Wall Streeters, you know,
and they're
Wall Street
neocons
elite.
Too. They end up being.
They are usually in with the neocons. Okay, so none of these groups am I thrilled with. But so what do I have to do? I have to say what's the best I can get out of a bad thing. If I'm this is you know, be like you looking at the Bernie Sanders administration figuring out, you know, who's there that you could go along with. Okay. So here's where I am on Bannon. Certainly the Bannon, Gorka, Miller wing, I want them all gone. But the fact of the matter is they ain't all gone. It's the Trump administration. He won. Those are his guys. He put them in place. I'm a realist.
But you don't want them. You want them all gone in the same way you want everybody in the Trump
White House.
In the
same way that I want Trump gone and everybody else gone and replaced with Bernie Sanders and crew. Okay. So, but to be realistic.
Because at least that's fair.
Yeah, exactly. So. But to look at, there are different reasons that I want different ones of them gone, but that's why I supported Bernie in the first place.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, so
let me make an analogy. If Bernie won and he had, let's say, Dennis Kucinich and Hillary Clinton in his administration.
Wait a minute. Did you say Hillary Clinton in Bernie Sanders' administration?
Yeah, no, I did say that because to me, some of the people Trump has in are the equivalent. They're that
contradictory. Yeah, but the problem is Hillary would figure out the line of secession, and everybody above her would have an accident. Yeah,
and that's exactly what I see happening with the Trump. There's a reason I use that. Trump has snakes in his midst. He has people who are not on his side.
But my point being this. So here's what I have to look at it, and people say, oh, you're for Bannon and you're for this guy. I ain't for none of them. But if I'm a realist and I look at it, I say, who's who? And I've said this before. The only thing I can hope for out of the Trump administration, which ain't much, is to stay out of a war. That's because I'm a non-interventionalist. I'm a peace guy, whatever you want, to stay out of a war. We're going to talk about that in the third segment. When I look at the Bush administration, the Trump administration, when I look at McMaster, when I look at the neocons, et cetera, the one thing I do know is the Bannon, Steve Bannon there, though I probably most everything else we don't agree on, the only thing I can say is about him is, if there's a discussion about more or less troops, about more or less military intervention, Steve Bannon's probably going to be the one that's more likely to say less military intervention. So while I'm no supporter of Bannon, Gorka, Miller at Al, any way that I can hopefully get less war, we're better off. So if Steve Bannon's gone, I wouldn't be mad as long as I would be thrilled with it, as long as he were replaced by someone who was at least anti-interventionalism. We have no way of saying that. So I'll say this, though. So here's what I'm going to say. If I had to guess, this is a tough one because you don't know what pressures are coming from where. If I had to guess, I'd probably go with you, Lee. If I had
Where
to guess,
going?
I would probably go with, I'd probably go with your prediction.
Oh, okay.
If I had to guess, I would probably say.
I thought we were going someplace.
No, okay. We'll be here at least until 5. I can guarantee
okay.
you that.
Okay, good.
I would have to say, I probably don't think that Bannon's going to go. I don't think, and for a lot of people on the left who say Bannon's got to go, I think here's the bottom line. If he goes, you don't like the ideology of this administration. If they get rid of Bannon, you know what? Let's face it. They're not going to replace him with somebody that I'm going to be happy with anyway. The worst case scenario, they replace him with another Steve Bannon who happens to be a neocon too. And then
Let me divide the halves of the White House up into another way of saying it. There's the people who went along with the agenda that Trump ran on. And then there's the people who don't. That's it. So in other words, Trump ran on certain specific things. So for instance, if you're in the administration and you're not in favor of a border wall, forget whether you're right or wrong, you're against what Trump ran on. Does that make sense? The first gauge I'm using is whether you're in favor of the agenda that he ran on or not. That's it. So on issues like the border wall, on calling radical Islamic terrorism out by name, on tax reform, on, I could just go down the line, right? The guys you're mentioning are on Trump's side, which means they're on the side of the Trump voter.
Maybe, but keep in mind, there's one thing you got to keep
in
mind.
But I don't care about Trump. I just want to make sure, I want to underline this. They're on the side of the Trump voter. That's what's key.
Right, yeah, because what I was going to bring into light here is this. The things that Trump ran on aren't necessarily, to me, I think it's fairly obvious that some of the things that he ran on were things that he ran on, that he's reversed course on some things.
Like
so
what?
It is possible, like the border wall.
No, he hasn't reversed course.
Yeah,
the border wall's going ahead.
No, there ain't a
he
border
has
wall.
Not reversed.
In fact, he even
okay,
said,
I'll,
in
I'll
fact,
wait. Name one statement where he's ever taken back the border wall.
Sure.
I'll wait.
He told the guy from Mexico, remember it was leaked, that the border wall was the least important thing in their conversation. So
yes.
He's backed
well,
up.
Okay,
on the
wait,
wall.
Wait. So in other words, because
the
there are other
important.
Issues that are more important in talking to the Mexican head of state,
yeah.
That is not him going back to the border wall at all. It is not him in any way. He's saying we have to talk about a number of things that are important, but of those things right now, well, right, because it's not up to the Mexican, because our
right.
policy is not up to him. You cannot name a single time that he's gone back in the border
well,
wall.
Here's the other part
not
of it.
Once.
As
not
soon as they
once.
Started negotiating for the border, I mean, for the budget, the first thing he gave up was the border wall. It was I've never seen anything go so fast. Hey, what do you want to get? Take the border wall. Now can we start talking?
They're clearly moving forward on the border wall. Now, there are people who aren't in favor of it. I don't believe Paul Ryan's in favor of it.
I know it feels good, Lee, and you guys love the border wall.
Okay, I'll wait. You tell me the statement. I'll wait. I'm not going to say anything else.
I know it feels good, and you guys love the border wall, but it's become fairly obvious now that Donald Trump ran on the border wall, but the border wall is not where he is. But, I mean, look, I'm not trying to bust your balloon. I'm not trying to be the bad guy. You guys want a border wall, and, like, you can go home and have visions of a border wall. I think Donald Trump has, you know, thrown you to the wolves on the border wall. But I don't want to be a bad guy.
I'm sorry,
did you say
something that Donald Trump said? I'll just be over here.
Yeah. He said it's not important, and we know it's not.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't say that. Don't lie about what he said. Get it accurate. Look, he did not say it's not important. He said, here's the thing, Garland, you can't name it. So I'm going to go over again. You can't name it. You've lost the argument on points. You can't name it. I know you don't like the border wall, but the fact is Donald Trump has not gone back on it. Now, my point is real straightforward. When you get elected on something, you should stick by it, unless there's very good reason, in which case then you can reverse it and explain it to people. So if you say, for instance,
that you're going to drain the swamp and you bring in all the Goldman Sachs guys and Rothschild guys, then clearly you've gone back on your word.
Right, which is why I want those guys gone.
But they ain't going anywhere. But they're not going. They're not going anywhere. I don't think Steve Bannon's going anywhere, and I don't think these guys are going anywhere.
No, we'll see. We'll see. First off, some of the swamp guys, arguably, Reince is part of the problem. Here's the issue. I'll tell you what one of the biggest problems for Donald Trump is. He is the leader of, he used to describe himself as a messenger. He is, in fact, become the leader of a movement, but there's no movement. In other words, where are the other populist candidates? Let me give you one example. Right now, today, there's a primary election in Alabama, okay? It's Strange versus Moore. By the way,
it's specifically Strange versus Moore.
That's
Roy
right.
Moore versus some guy whose last name is Strange.
Right. It's Luther Strange versus Judge Roy Moore. Judge Roy Moore is the guy who's well known for the Ten Commandments in the courtroom.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Trump came out in favor, he did it again today, in favor of Luther Strange. Luther Strange is the establishment candidate. He's the guy McConnell was backing.
Yep.
Moore is what I'm hearing on the ground is likely to win.
He's up 32-28 right now.
Yes, he's 32-28, and I've heard it might be closer to 50. I was just talking to somebody.
Alabama?
Alabama.
Yeah, I would expect him to win in Alabama.
I would too.
That's the guy I would expect in Alabama to win.
So here's what's interesting.
In the Bible Belt, in the conservative Bible Belt, that's who I would expect to win.
And why is Trump expending political capital on a candidate that McConnell backed? I think the problem is, and this is why I hope Trump keeps the pressure up on McConnell. I agree about draining the swamp, but I think you underestimate the difficulty. It's not like you can drain the swamp like that. Mike and I talked about this last week.
So let me make a quick statement about two things about that. Number one, however, when it comes to draining the swamp, when you're the guy picking your swamp partners, and you pick all Goldman Sachs, you can't say, "Well, gee, you know, I'm having trouble training the swamp." When you're picking the guys. The other thing is,
what do you mean it's a movement with a leader. Wait, let me stop you there. When you say when you're picking the guys,
it was his choice.
Did Donald Trump have a transition team or
yes,
not?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so why? I want you to be realistic about this. And the reason, I'm not picking on you. I think a lot of people are unrealistic about what the president actually does.
I understand. No, look, I understand that you put together a transition team and they
say,
for Treasury Secretary, we recommend 1A, 2B, and C. Now, but as the guy in charge, you can say, look, man, I'm not doing this Goldman Sachs. Not every single person that works for you was with Goldman Sachs or Rothschild or Soros. You got to say, hey, look, man, I said I wasn't going to do this.
Right. So,
and I'm not going to do it.
And so
even if you're a Trump fan, you got to be able to say, and I've seen this time and time again, I've seen it with Obama, I've seen it with Bush, I've seen it with Clinton. I've seen people who come in as a fan of a guy. And when the person does the opposite of what they are going to say, I'm not saying on everything, but on a particular issue, they won't call him out on that issue and they'll make excuses
right.
for that
and
issue.
And so I think the thing is, Trump is a first-time politician who's never been in Washington before, and he's never gone through the process. who was poisoned by a transition team that included people that it makes sense that his transition team included people like Jared Kushner, in the sense that Jared Kushner is married to his beloved daughter, right? I get that. It was a huge mistake. I think Trump will. Here's the thing about the Trump administration, I say, and I'll continue to say, it ain't over till the fat lady sings. You can't, it's impossible right now. As long as Bannon is still in there, and if Bannon leaves, I'll say as long as Miller's still in there. And by the way,
well, let me say this about you saying it be a mistake, because I think it's important to say that, because people use that word a lot. Somebody robs a bank and he says, I made a mistake. Donald Trump chose a bunch of Wall Street, you know, people.
And, he didn't choose.
And he,
say, well,
he made a mistake. He nominated them. They're his guy. And he made a mistake. Here's what I look at it like this. If you're walking across the yard and you step on a rake and it comes up and slams you in the forehead, ouch, that's a mistake. You didn't see that the grass was kind of high. You didn't see the rake.
So if your daughter,
but if your daughter betrays you, is that a mistake? If somebody says, hey, look, we got five people, they're all from Goldman Sachs, and you say, sure, that's not a mistake.
If your daughter betrays you, and the people lie to you and they're disingenuous to you, which I believe they were, I believe
you shouldn't be president if you're that naive, because
right.
you know,
so, right,
you know good and well
your daughter,
you said you weren't. You
that's
knew
that's why
that
I keep going
said,
back to this, Carlin.
But you said you weren't going to do this. Donald Trump wasn't born yesterday. He knows that he said he wasn't going to. He in fact, he specifically named Goldman Sachs when he talked about
that's
Hillary.
Right.
He specifically said these Goldman Sachs people that are going to give us the shaft.
Right. So your,
and then
your theory is
decision,
he was lying the whole time and you can't prove it.
I'm
my theory
it
is
a
he was
mistake,
tricked
it was
by
a
his
decision,
daughter. That's my theory.
You need to hold him responsible.
I do.
Making excuses for him like he's a kid.
No,
he's not
I'm
kid.
Not making excuses for him. I'm telling people to call him out and to call the White House and say fire McMaster.
Are you going
to
call him out?
Just thought I'd get that in. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about foreign policy and Afghanistan, and it relates to this topic. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round three of Fault Lines with Nixon and Scaramucci. I mean, Nixon and Stranahan.
Wait, what did you say?
Nixon and Stranahan.
Well, wait, why did you say that?
Nixon in the well. Let's see if Scaramucci was the mooch. What can we get? Come up with a name for the Stranahan. The hand.
I don't know. Stranahan's fine.
Okay.
I've heard enough variants on Stranahan in my life.
Yeah.
That I don't need any other ones.
Okay, Scaramucci doesn't work for you.
Stranahan works pretty well, I think.
Okay, we'll go with Stranahan then. So round three, the Taliban has penned a letter recommending that the president withdraw forces from Afghanistan after 16 years of war. Will that affect his decision to go or stay? You know who I think should make the decision? Scaramucci. I watched.
Wait, what?
Scaramucci. The mooch has got to make this decision.
Okay, let me just start off by saying, you're thinking about Scaramucci for a guy who was in the administration about 15 minutes.
I watched
you're
the
thinking
Sunday
about him
shows,
way too
right?
much.
And you know, I looked after watching the Sunday shows and seeing Scaramucci speak, I thought, in that administration, he sounds like the voice of wisdom, which is kind of scary. When the mooch is the voice of wisdom in your administration, you
wait,
got
what did he say that's
on.
Wise?
What did he say that's wise?
Yeah.
Oh, he talked about the Charlotte thing and that there was errors there. And he talked about, you know, but I say we bring the
doesn't
mooch back.
Doesn't sound wise so far.
Here's what I say. We bring the mooch back. We throw this Taliban thing on him and we say, mooch, which direction do we go? That's just what I'm just thinking. Because you know what? Let me tell you something. The mooch is going to make a decision and he's going to go with it. I'm just throwing it out there.
This segment has started off weird. I don't know. For some reason, I feel like I'm in a David Lynch, Monica Bellucci dream. Sort of something's gone wrong here.
Here's what's really weird. We're starting off with the Taliban has written a letter. And
okay,
let's
talk about that.
Yeah,
let's not talk about Scaramucci anymore.
The Taliban's written a letter, and from what I've read, I could have written it. I'm looking at it, and I'm like,
by the way, I would not be proud of that.
That's what I'm saying. I could have written the letter. A lot of people I know could have written the letter. The Taliban wrote a letter. Okay, when you write a letter that says, you've been there 16 years, get out, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that's kind of logic I'm hard to argue with. You know me, Lee, my position is out, out, out. Every soldier, every gun, every bayonet, every tent, everything. Do we still use pup tents? We don't use pup
okay,
tents.
So
we
two.
Use pup tents, all of them out. So which brings this question. And people are going to say this, because, you know, this is the way people go. Well, now he can't possibly leave that the Taliban has said he should leave. And I'm like, so who cares? I've been saying he should leave all along. What do you think? I think we should get out, man.
2 points. First off, I think if the Taliban is looking for PR help,
yeah,
it would be great on your resume. Imagine if you could say Russian radio host, Taliban spokesman. That would be quite the LinkedIn resume right there.
Instead
don't you
of
think?
Baghdad Bob, it'll be Kabul
Garland.
Kenneth, I don't know.
Kandahar Garland.
Kandahar, there we go.
Kandahar Garland. Case.
But I'm down with the Taliban on this. As crazy as that sounds, when they say let me tell you something. If, you know, think
again,
of the most evil guy in any
again,
movie
I'm
you've ever seen.
I'm down with the Taliban is not a quote
if
that
Lex
you want.
If Lex Luthor said, hey, I think you guys should get out, I'd say, well, Lex Luthor's an evil guy and he wants to, like, overthrow the world. But he got this one, man. He hit the nail on the head
So here's my point. First off, this actually relates to the last segment. Because we were talking about the push to get rid of Steve Bannon. I believe that is directly connected.
But do you think he's going to be the spokesman for the Taliban?
Nope. I think it's directly connected to the push to bring more troops into Afghanistan. It's very clear to me. Right now, the big thing, the main person, aside from Donald Trump does make his own decisions. We have seen that.
Yeah.
But
unfortunately.
But the main advisor pushing against the Afghan thing is Bannon. This is all the reports that are coming out. Pushing against expanding troops on the ground. And McMaster and his team are aware of that, and they're dropping stories. We didn't even get into we talked about it briefly yesterday. But on Friday, CNN ran a story, and they attacked me as part of it. And Jake Tapper suggested that the FBI might want to look into me for suggesting McMaster be fired.
And I was upset because it's my job to attack you, and I don't want anybody
stepping
on my turf.
And it was just dishonest because
explain exactly what the attack was.
Here's what it was. It was a story that talked about Bannon, showed his picture, mentioned me, said a former Breitbart reporter who now literally works for Russia, and showed one of my tweets, is pushing the Fire McMaster campaign, which I am. I have a site, firemcmaster.com. Go visit it. It's got reasons. Here's what it is. It's free speech.
It's what we talked about earlier, isn't it?
I should be able to go up, and I will, and I'm going to do it, and they can't shut me up. I should be able to go up and make a case why I think McMaster should be fired. That's all I'm doing.
Exactly.
I'm saying that it's inconsistent with what Trump ran on. It's exactly what I said in the last thing. No one had to tell me to do it. No one here, no one at Sputnik told me anything about it.
One of the funny
things
about
it, Bannon didn't tell me about
it. Our listeners need to understand is this. So basically, the position they were taking was that because Lee said fire McMaster, and because he did a show for Sputnik, obviously this was, you know, some Putin-Russian plot that he was being pushed, you know, he was a puppet for Russia, and so he was doing this Russian plot.
And a puppet for Bannon.
And a puppet for Bannon and Russia, which if you're on CNN, that's, you know, this one and the same, of course, when it comes to CNN
but they
or
have
MSNBC.
No, but they don't address the fact that Garland took the opposite position on this very show.
Right, here's what they left out, exactly, that when we discussed it on the show, we were on there, and Lee was saying, McMaster's got to go. And I was thinking, I don't agree with Bannon on this and that. I don't think they should fire McMaster just now, blah, blah. But I have mixed emotions on it, McMaster, because of his pro kind of war and pro interventionist.
Van Jones has come out in support of McMaster.
Right.
I mean, I could go down the line.
But the bottom line was, on this show, you had a show where one person said, fire McMaster. The other person said, don't fire McMaster. And they cherry-picked and just said, well, it's a Russian plot because this guy said fire McMaster, leaving the fact that his partner on the same show said the opposite.
It's actually a logical fallacy. It's a logical fallacy to do it to anybody. So, for instance, I'll use the ACLU as an example. Okay, you're on the board of the ACLU. So if you were to make some argument, well, of course, you say that you're on the board of the ACLU. That's not a valid argument. It's valid to take someone's biases into account.
Right.
But at the end of the day, if you say the ACLU filed a brief on this date, that's a fact.
Right.
Or it's not. You're either right or you're wrong about it. And whatever biases you have, we can separate out. Now, do you have a bias about the ACLU?
Sure, I love the ACLU.
Sure.
You supported them for years.
Now, by the way.
And I'm open about that. I don't pretend. When you ask me that, I say, hey, I think the ACLU is a great organization. I love and support the ACLU. I'm not trying to hide that.
And by the way, one of the reasons that we do the intro.
Here's the other part. But they don't tell me to say stuff.
I
say it's stuff.
And I'm just
going
to point this out. The intro that we do to the show every day, we talked about this briefly earlier. I'm Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan. Boom. There. I said it. I'm not like I'm an investigative reporter. It's like I'm a Republican. I'm a Trump supporter. I say that all the time. But that doesn't mean if I say it's raining out, I'm right or wrong. It's a fact, irrelevant. Garland says who he is. When Mike Hirsch was filling in for Garland, he said who he is. That's what we do now.
Well, and the other thing was that I don't think Lee's brought up yet, that after they brought this up, no, this Lee Stranahan, what they said was he should be investigated by the FBI for exercising
his constitutional rights.
And what, within hours,
My YouTube account's been terminated, and that's a long, painful thing.
And I've never heard of that happening to anyone.
Yeah, so what they did was, I've had a YouTube account for about 10 years. The reason I'm in journalism is largely because of my YouTube stuff. But I had family videos up there.
Right.
Because I've been using YouTube since 2007. I was at a YouTube event. I was at a YouTube party. MC Hammer hugged me. Yeah, there you go. At this event, I talked to Joe Satriani, the guitarist. I talked to a bunch of people. And I used to be on the left. You remember there was these Obama girl videos?
Yeah, I remember them.
Oh, so I've sat next to Obama girl. Amber, lovely young woman.
You know, one of the things,
I did work for that company.
Yeah, I got videos where things that I predicted, you know, were going to happen before the, whatchamacallit, and I got up on YouTube videos. And I can say, oh, no, I predicted Hillary was going to lose, and somebody can say, no, you didn't, and I can say, look at the video and look at the data, or I predicted this.
That's what
I've
kills
me. I've got videos
me.
That I can point to and say, I said this was going to happen, and here's my evidence. If you were to kill my YouTube account.
They didn't just make it so people can't see it and say, hey, you've got 48 hours to download everything. Which I could deal with. It's all gone.
Right.
Now, it might be somewhere on a server. Maybe the CIA has it, and the NSA,
something like that.
But all the videos that I did from Lebanon, where I can say to people, look, this video was posted in 2013, like you just said.
Yep.
I used to be able to say to people, look, this is me talking about ISIS in September 2013. This is me saying the Syrian refugee crisis is going to be a big deal in 2013.
Well, here's the other thing
gone. Well, let me just say this. I uploaded that stuff from my phone directly to YouTube. I thought my stuff was safe on YouTube. And I'll tell you, Alex Jones from InfoWars and Diamond and Silk, who are these two.
Yeah, I know. They are the Trump supporter girls.
They're filing a suit against YouTube, and I may just join in. This is
Well, let me tell
nuts.
You why it's important. The first time I ever went on Fox News. I had an opportunity to do national television, right? And one of the first things that when I got the call from New York and they're like, well, you know, okay, we need a Democrat to come up here and blah, blah, blah. And we discussed my positions and we discussed what I thought and whether I'd, you know, we're willing to go on. There's a lot of Democrats that wouldn't even go on Fox News. And they said, okay. They said, we'd like to look at some videos of you, but they want to know how you handle yourself in front of the camera.
Right.
Go to my YouTube account. There's some videos. Right now, that can cost you because there can be people who say, oh, we might want to bring Lee on. And you can say, go to my YouTube account. You can see some videos of me. You can see some of the things that I've done.
I made all these comedy videos that were very anti-Republican when I wrote for HuffPost when I was on the left. I didn't delete any of those. I'm not one of those people who like put stuff behind
right.
me.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I
yeah,
mean?
I know what like, I'm with you. You keep all. That's part of your history.
I keep it all. It's part of my history. I'm not ashamed of it. There were funny videos and all gone.
Well,
and
you know
that stuff that I don't have backups.
That brings up right now. And it's something that I believe in there. People aren't going to like this, but I'm going to say this. So there's a website called The Daily Stormer or something. There are a couple of alt-right websites, which I oppose. They're anti-Semitic
Daily
garbage.
Daily Stormer's right? not alt. I mean, that's like...
Yeah, that's far right.
Alt-right's a euphemism.
Yeah,
it's a white nationalist
yeah,
site.
It's neo-Nazi, neo...
That's right.
Blah, blah. But at any rate, stuff that I think is horrible. However, that being said, I believe in an open internet and everything should be up there. And if somebody wants to go see what they're doing and they're writing a book, let's say you want to write a book that says these neo-Nazis are terrible.
That's
right. And you want to go to the, and I've seen people write articles where they've gone to this Daily Stormer and they've said, look at the terrible things that they've said.
That's right.
It should be there for people who want to research whatever you want. This stuff should be there, right? So now you've got GoDaddy and some other places that are shutting these things down. I oppose that. And here's the thing about it. So Garland Nixon, I get my left-wing website up and I say all the wonderful lefty things and far left things that I believe in, right? Who's to say that Jeff Sessions or whoever doesn't decide, hey, I don't like this stuff. Who's to say that the owner of whatever company, internet company says, we don't like this lefty crap and shuts me down?
Well,
and that's the problem I have. It's not about who. You don't have to like it. In fact, I always say this. The speech that is most important to protect is speech that is not popular. You don't have to protect popular speech.
Well, let's bring this back to Afghanistan, because we talked about the logical fallacy where people go, well, you work for Sputnik, or you work for Breitbart, or you are with the ACLU. You know, it's the same fallacy, and I was joking around about it, but it doesn't matter. Here's the thing. The Taliban says you guys should, we think you should pull out. They're either right or wrong.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any difference who says it, actually. And I was joking around with you about, well, gee, you don't want to be a spokesperson for the Taliban. I don't care about any of this. Here's the thing. I don't care whether it's Malik Zulu Shabazz from the New Black Panther Party or Richard Spencer, or whoever. I'm in favor of the marketplace of ideas. That's what I'm in favor of. And on this Afghan issue in particular, let me tell you my concern. The people who want to shut down speech also want to ram policy down your throat.
Yep.
And that's what concerns me. I think I'm fine. And this is what I wish the president would go more on offense about. I wish he'd done it on healthcare. Let me give you an example on healthcare. Congress broke his promise. And by the way, Obama did the same promise and he got broken too. Remember when Obama was running? He said, we're going to do this in the open. We're going to have an open. It's not going to be people in, you know, smoke-filled back rooms, right? Remember that? He said this would be an open process. Everything will be open. He said that when he ran. Then he gets into power. It's all done behind closed doors. The Republicans are very critical of it. Now they get into power and they do their stupid health care bill behind closed doors. What I would like to see in Afghanistan is this. I'd like to see, and this is my advice to the White House, start educating people and laying out options. If the president and his surrogates come out and say, and even McMaster, you want to make the case for adding ground troops? How about this, McMaster? How about the White House? I'm going to square the circle in this whole thing, Garland. It's magical. Ready? What if they just issued two different position papers and said, we have two competing factions in the White House. Here's position paper.
Right.
A.
That's why we should stay. This is why.
Here's position paper B. And we invite the Democrats. We'd like to invite Chuck Schumer and Tulsi Gabbard.
Right.
Right. You see what I'm doing there? Chuck Schumer is going to give one position. He's a Democrat. Tulsi Gabbard is going to give another position. And then let's get that all out on the table. Put them all up on the White House website.
Let's get Lindsey Graham and Rand Paul.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
And let's start to discuss this in an open way. This is what I don't like. When you shut down speech, or worse, when you try to intimidate people.
Or as can be clearly seen, when Garland Nixon jokingly says, "Hi, I'm with the Taliban because we should be," you attack Garland. Oh, I knew you were a Taliban sympathizer, instead of saying, taking into account, look, I'm simply saying this is my position.
No, no, and I was just making.
I know. I'm not saying you did.
Yeah, right.
I was just jokes between us.
That's right.
When you said it, I know there are literally, we know the establishment people on both sides, Lindsey Graham, Chuck Schumer, whoever, would attack me and immediately say, aha, you're a, you know, Russia, you're a Taliban sympathizer. Because I said, yeah, I agree. I think we ought to leave. And which is an invalid attack because it never addresses whether or not we actually should leave. But I agree with you.
Well, you know,
because
people,
one of the things that upset a lot of voters is this, is what you're saying. You're saying, put it out there so people have an opportunity to see what's going on, is that people believe, validly so, that there are nefarious dark forces behind these decisions, you know, pushing the president or whoever to do this, pushing other people. People look at it and they say, well, I believe that there's Lockheed Martin and the military industrial process that are making money, that there's this neocons, or that there's some, you know, body regarding Israel's position, the AIPAC, whoever, right? So people look at these things and they rightly assume that there are these dark forces in the background, and that really, whether it's the president or whoever, they're not really making the decision. So what you're saying is, put it out there. So instead of people having to assume here's what people are going to say, which force won, which dark force won.
Well, and let me put it a different way. People talk about fake news on both sides. Fake news, fake news. The left says, oh, Breitbart's fake news. Breitbart says, oh, look, CNN's fake news.
Well, do you know what? The left says CNN's fake news too.
Well,
the left I'm a part of.
But let's leave that aside.
Right.
Do you know what I think one of the big issues is? I don't hear anybody talk about this. Fake debate.
Right.
What I mean by fake debate is the pretense of debate, but really, see, here's the way
that was the healthcare debate. That's what we talked about. It. That was the whole healthcare thing. It was all a fraud, and that vote with John McCain and all the coming in at the end was all staged. It was all a fake debate. That thing was dead, and they were pretending as though John McCain's going to come in, and he's going to be the final vote, and
well,
he's going to come in.
And anybody who's a parent knows how to do this. Here's what you do. You go to your kids, and you go, what would you like tonight? Would you like broccoli or cauliflower?
Right.
Right. Now, what did I just do?
Right.
I just restricted the choices to two choices that are good that the kid's not going to pick on his own.
Right.
If I say, what do you want to eat? The kid will go ice cream.
Right.
Right. But if I say, what do you want? Broccoli or cauliflower? That's valid when you're parenting.
Right.
It's not valid when you're dealing with adult citizens of a republic, which is what we are.
And when you're talking about the choices that are going to send people to war.
That's
that
right.
That are going to enlist us in who knows how many more years at some what appears to be a wasted time in some foreign country with young men and women running through the mountains.
So I am challenging McMaster, state your case. I'm challenging Bannon, state your case. Chuck Schumer, state your case. Tulsi Gabbard, state your case. Bernie Sanders, state your case. Rand Paul, state your case and let people figure it out on their own.
Because Garland and Lee are sure going to state their case here every Monday through Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.